And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor LaPalme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wilden. How's it going, Johannes?
Happy Sunday, Connor. Happy Habs Sunday. I don't know about you, but I watched a team, have a few bad moments last night in the third period, and then just come right back in the second half to win convincingly. And I don't know about you, but I am starting to believe that this team is for real.
Yeah, it was definitely a happier victory Sunday after the way the Habs played last night, and you could argue all season so far. I'm sure we'll get into it a bit more, but yeah, it's nice to see sort of the no quit we kind of saw in the playoffs still, you know, working its way through this, like staying with the team through the season so far. So it's a refreshing thing to see the Canadians kind of, you know, not get too out of sorts when things not necessarily go their way, which we've seen kind of can melt the team down a bit in years past.
Yeah, and so, and you know, we're at the end of that three game stretch, going into the Habs home opener, which is going to be, you know, needless to say, a little strange this year, but we'll get into that. Yeah, I don't know, you want to jump right in? I mean, what are your takeaways from the first three game back-to-back-to-back against Vancouver that we've seen maybe ever?
Maybe ever, you know, maybe what, never again.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's certainly unique. Obviously, we have a back-to-back coming up, not next week, but the week after against Vancouver. But again, that's just two games. And that's, we're going to see lots of that this season. But the back-to-back-to-back, the West Coast road trip to start the season, you know, where are you at?
I'm pretty confident. The one thing, you know, obviously it's been said a lot by a lot of people so far, but just the offense, the output, you know, it never feels like they're out of a game so far in with the way they're scoring, which is kind of refreshing as a Habs fan to sort of see, you know, if the team isn't struggling and scraping and hoping that 2 to 3 goals is enough. It seems like they're capable of really filling the net, which we've seen the last, every game they scored over 4 goals. So, or at least 4 goals, I should say. So that was the biggest takeaway for me, is just the fact that they never feel out of it. So if Price maybe has not his best night, or any goalie for that matter doesn't have a great night, they're capable of, you know, running and gunning with a team to sort of outscore them, which is kind of nice. Okay, it's been a while since you sort of felt like the offense isn't hindering the team's overall success, which is, I find, refreshing and I'm excited about. And yes, I know they scored 3 goals against Edmonton, but you know what I'm saying is they're scoring goals in bunches and it's great.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, it wasn't that long ago that if the Habs fell down by 1 goal late in the game, you kind of like, that's the end of the game. And it just doesn't feel that way this season. And yeah, I think we got an inkling of it last year where we saw the Canadians, you know, be able to fight a little bit more. And now you've combined that fight with actual skill on the ice, and suddenly it's a brand new team. And so there's lots to get to last night. I mean, the Armia hit and then the response last night. And, you know, there's lots of things to get to. But just in general, let's do it this way. 3 moments from the last 3 games that you liked or didn't like, that stood out to you.
Okay, okay, I'll go with the Jonathan Drouin's goal. Was a nice moment. You know, it felt good to see him score. I think because of the pressure and expectation that's kind of dumped on him, fair or not, I mean, we've also been critical of his play and things like that, but he's been playing, I think, pretty well this season for the most part. And it was good to see him sort of get rewarded to show off some of his skill with that goal. I know it was not necessarily the most important goal of the game, but it was nice again to see him. Well, it was important enough, but it was nice to see him display his skill that we all know he has, and I guess kind of get rewarded and get some people off his back. It's kind of hard to sum it up in one moment, but like Tyler Toffoli, we kind of talked about him waiting for him to kind of come out, you know, kind of break out, and you know, he's had chances but hasn't scored, and then, you know, he kind of dominated Vancouver, I mean, at least for two games, but he was probably the best player, best Habs player for the three games. So, yeah, that. And I guess if I'm going to go negative, it would just be the penalty killing in the first game against Vancouver, where it seemed like they were getting giving up the same sort of goal on the same play, like at least two times, or maybe it felt like more than that. You know, it can't all be roses, I guess. And, you know, there's always some little things that the teams need to work on, no matter how good your record is or how well you're playing. There's always something you can fix. And I think the parade to the penalty box, which I know if you want to talk about the referees in general, was a bit much, but they still took a lot of penalties and they still kind of, you know, were letting teams sort of hang around because they, you know, in the two games they've lost, they've kind of let teams hang around and become, you know, and beat them because of their penalty kill and taking penalties. So that's sort of one thing that's, you know, we talked about it last week about hopefully it's just early. And it is still early, but hopefully, you know, they can sort it out sooner than later so it doesn't become a trend for the season.
I totally agree with all of those points. I'm gonna give you three. I'm just gonna react a little bit to the first one. So I loved watching that Jonathan Drouin goal, but it was the most Jonathan Drouin thing ever. The next time he's in a breakaway, he tries exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm gonna believe in Drouin when he varies it up when he's got two breakaways within 2 or 3 minutes of each other. I don't know why you do that unless you're. You're not thinking, I guess you're just reacting in that moment, but to try
to be fair, he almost got him. It wasn't like, you know, Holtby was like all over it. He almost got him. So, but yes, I agree. Yeah, try something almost. Else.
So the other thing I want to talk about is Jake Evans. Talk about goals from unexpected places, you know, talk about four lines who are all legitimate threat to score, who all are skating really fast. It's utterly fantastic to see a kid who came up the hard way, I think you'd have to say, played a lot of NCAA, played a year in Laval, had to earn his spot and has found it and is making the most of it. And I think utterly, utterly fantastic to see him do as well. And the last thing I want to say, and this is, you know, a little bit of a cheat because it's just last night, but you start to see why the depth is so important with that Corey Perry call-up. And, I mean, I think it's only necessary because Armia goes down after having a fantastic game and I think a solid start to the season. You know, Armia is one of these players, not unlike Lekkonen, where you can see where how much skill he has, but for whatever reason, like, this, he doesn't seem to get the bounces. And he just... I don't know. It feels like he found his footing the early part of this season, whether it's the line mates or whether just he's feeling better in himself. But like, he looks really good and scored some big goals. But the reality of hockey is that people are going to go down. And so having Corey Perry, this 35-year-old veteran, be able to step in, play a hard-nosed game, get a bit of a weird goal, but be dangerous, right? He was dangerous. He had about 3 or 4 decent shots and gave Tyler Toffoli an amazing pass that he certainly was not expecting. It's really nice to see the Bergevin depth moves actually pay off. Whereas I think he's been guilty of, you know, finding really fringe depth players. That Corey Perry move looks really smart right now. And it'll be great to know that if somebody does go down, you have somebody ready to step in at a moment's notice.
Yeah, I'll let you all kind of tackle these. No, that's fine. So Jake Evans, I agree. I mean, we kind of got a little taste of it in the playoffs before he got hurt last year, I guess. You know, he was looking actually pretty good against Pittsburgh, but he went down with an injury. And I guess, you know, because you didn't see him for the rest of the way and, you know, you kind of forget about a player who's, you know, in your mind is considered a depth player, and then you see him again. He picked up right where he left off, and I agree. I mean, he came up. I guess there's something to, you know, there's something to be said about a guy who's willing to put all that work in, and you like to see a guy who works that hard get rewarded, both with playing time and also just, you know, scoring goals. You know, he does a lot of the dirty work, and it does seem like he's, well, not just because of him, but the team is definitely four lines deep, dangerous all the time. You know, it's nice to, kind of said before, it's nice to have a team where you're not relying on one person or one line to get everything done. You know, we've seen it so far. every game it's a little bit spread out, or there's one line that's kind of carrying the load versus another. It's not just, we're not just expecting Deno, Gallagher, and Tatar to go out there and score goals every night. We're getting it from everyone, so it's nice. You know, it's good. And like I said, Evans is one of those guys you kind of have to root for in terms of how much effort he put in. You know, being a seventh round pick and no one expecting much of you, you know, to make his way up, even though, you know, hopefully it lasts. But, you know, even still, he's proving he belongs. So it's good for him. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen with the center ice position down the road with, obviously, I'm sure we'll talk about all the rumors and trades that happen. But, you know, with apparently Philip Deneau turning down an offer from Mark Bergevin in the offseason, according to some, who knows, you know, if he'll be able to, he might be able to move even further up the lineup. And we'll see. And then again, that's all rumor and conjecture. But, your other point, which right now escapes me. What was your other point? Sorry. Oh, Corey Perry in the depth. Yeah. The thing is, you know, sometimes when you bring a new player into the lineup, you're worried about how it's going to affect chemistry, right? I mean, it is only five games, but this person has never played with these line mates before, especially if they're new to the team. And the Canadians did not miss a beat. That line was probably the most dangerous line of the game, I would think. And Corey Perry looked right at home. They didn't, like I said, they didn't miss a beat. And to the depth thing, it's nice to have a depth player you sign that is actually just for depth and not sort of being forced into a role they're not necessarily comfortable with. I'm not saying Corey Perry.
Oh my God, that's such a great
point. Can't play, but you know what I mean? There'd be a time where they would miss out on a free agent and then they'd sign Corey Perry and then you're like, okay, Corey Perry's not playing on our first line. That is kind of like, you know, you have a guy like Corey Perry who's coming in who, you know, is going to probably play well. He does things, you know, he plays this Corey Perry game that, you know, if he's on the other team, you freaking hate, you hate him, but he's on your team, so you'll be okay with it. But you know, it's just having a guy that can step in and play that way and look comfortable and again, having the team not look different, which I think in the past, if someone went down, like how many times did we see a guy like Paul Byron go down or any, even if you all are me and they have to bring in a guy who's, you know, it kind of screws up all the lineup for some reason, or it screws up lines and no one can, you know, there's no consistency and the play of the team just kind of drops off. You know, granted it's one game, but it seems like nothing really changed. And it, you know, it could be that Vancouver is going to be a dumpster fire this year. We don't know, but still, it was nice to see the team not look like they were struggling when they brought in a depth player to fill in for an injured player. So, you know, I think the beginning of this season so far, again, it is still relatively young, but, you know, it's kind of played out as perfectly for the Canadiens and Marc Bergevin as, you know, anyone could have imagined.
Yeah. I thought another good moment was after Armia gets hit, everybody's in there.
And yeah.
You know, we can talk about how meaningful the fight was last night, and it seemed a little performative to me in the sense that, you know, it felt like something that had to happen, but that nobody really had their heart into it. I mean, the guys on the TSM broadcast were talking about the fact that those two players are friends and train together. You know, it's one of these things that's part of the mythos of hockey, and whether it ultimately did anything or was valuable, it happened, and I guess it needed to happen. I want to go back to the moment that it actually happened, the game before, and the fact that you had so many players stepping in immediately, feeling like they could, feeling like they should. I just think it's a different approach to team concept, and I don't know that we saw that certainly a couple years ago, but even as consistently last year. And, you know, that tells me it's a team that is starting to believe in itself as more than just a collection of players, but as a concept, as an idea. And they're taking pride in both their team and they're looking out for one another. And I don't know if you agree with me, but there was a moment when that happened and it was just like everyone was in it. Everyone was in that fight. And that's what you need, I think. That's what you need to go the distance.
That, I think, is more important than, you know, like you said, and I agree with this sort of staged fight that happened the next game, you know? I mean, there's a whole other discussion to be had about, you know, how to handle this kind of situation from a player safety aspect of it. You know, because they're not going to suspend Tyler Myers for whatever reason. If you agree with it or not, I guess that's not the point. But then, you know, you're trying to be player safety, and then these guys are going to have a fight where they're punching each other in the head. So where's the player safety then?
Exactly.
You know, it's You know, don't tell Brian Burke that, apparently. You know, like, I the information that. He's talking about how fighting is keeping it in check. I'm like, it's a terrible take because it doesn't stop anything. It's not like Tyler Myers. I mean, I wouldn't consider Tyler Myers a dirty player. You know, I don't think. I think the excuse that he's tall is a... I mean, look, I'm not saying it's an excuse, but it's definitely valid when you are taller and you're going to hit someone a certain way. You're going to... You don't line up right. But it's on Tyler Myers to make sure he lines up right. So I think, you know, the hit was not great. I think it was definitely a hit to the head. I don't necessarily think Tyler Myers was skidding across the ice to, you know, knock his head off. Like I said, I don't think Tyler Myers is a dirty player, like, you know... Like, you know, the, you know, he hasn't done that kind of thing. He's not like a Radko Gudas or something like that, where these kind of places seem to follow him. Still, if you're being smart and you want to take these things seriously, he probably should have been suspended, and then there would have been no fight. And again, it's two staging, like, he's like, you know, people mentioned, these guys train together, they're friends. It's, you know, what's it really preventing? It didn't stop him from making the original hit. It's not going to stop him from trying to body check people in the future. It's not going to. No one's ever stopped being a, you know, a rat player because they got into a fight, because someone beat them up. It's never happened. So, you know, this whole policing the ice thing, it's total BS. Especially, I mean, if a guy's going to make a dirty play and you're going to get tossed for instigating, right? It's this weird sort of, like, I get they don't want people just going out there swinging wildly and starting fights by instigating them, but if you're going to use fighting as the policing of the players, you know, in air quotes or whatever, then you can't have an instigator. You can't have the guy who makes the dirty play get essentially two guys thrown out of a game potentially, right? Because, you know, one guy sticking up for his teammate that got, you know, cross checked in the back of the head into the boards.
Yeah, this, you is know, not a good look for the NHL. This is not a good look for the NHL. I don't think they handled it well. I don't think it's a 3-game suspension. I don't think he was head hunting. I do think that when you watch it, his shoulder is lower and he raises it through the hit and it hits him in the head. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing they say they want to get rid of. So you give him a game, it's a slap on the wrist, you send a message early that we're going to be watching for this stuff, then there doesn't have to be a fight, there doesn't have to be nonsense. It can be a broader signal throughout the league that this is what we're paying attention to. It just doesn't, I don't get the Berkey intake. I think it's the old school hockey stuff that...
Yeah.
It's going to limit how far the game can grow. It's going to make the game more dangerous than it already is. There's just no benefit for it. Don't tell me that that's some integral part of hockey where you're allowed to drill people on the head because their head is down. Like, that's just not, it's not where the game is going. Embrace it or get out of the way is what I think.
There's still obviously a bunch of people that like those takes, right? Because, I mean, obviously Don Cherry's been retired. But, you know, there needs to be someone to fill that void, and I guess Brian Burke is the guy that wants to take up that cause, because that's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of way he liked to play hockey, man. He was the GM of Toronto. He talked about truculence and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, he, outside of the 1 year in Anaheim where he got fortunate enough to trade for Chris Pronger and Scott Niedermeyer wanted to play with his brother, you know, Brian Burke's record as a GM and a coach isn't necessarily the best.
Yeah, I just, so, you know,
it's a terrible take. I think it's stupid. And another thing I thought that maybe would have helped in them deciding to suspend him is the fact that there was, you know, had it happened in the first period and they got the game misconduct, okay, you know what, fine, he missed most of the game. It's sort of like a game suspension. But it was at the end of the game. You know, his game misconduct was for 3 minutes.
Right.
You know what I mean? So what's the real penalty there? He was got thrown out of a game that they weren't going to win anyway. You know, they're already, the Canadians were already, like, you know, was what, 7-3 at that point, or 6-2 or whatever. So it doesn't, I agree. The message is not great. And I saw someone on Twitter say it. I can't remember if it was Connor McKenna or someone else, but it's, I always find it odd and a bit, I'll say stupid, that the NHL puts guys who are former goons in a position of player safety where their job is to go out there and sort of fight and be a bit dirty and rough. And they're the ones kind of being the arbiters of, well, that's not a dirty play, or that's a dirty play. This guy should be suspended. This guy shouldn't be suspended. And I'm sure there's more inner workings and politics and agreements that are play that we, as you know, we don't know about. But I still think it's a weird look to have a guy. You know, would you put Matt Cook as the head of player safety? Probably not. But, you know, they seem to look at those kind of guys
in charge of election security. Would you put, you know what I mean? It's like, Trump it doesn't make anything. Any. I mean, but I mean, like, it's just like, it tells you everything you need to know about how seriously they take player safety.
Exactly.
And I think it's a great point, the idea that, like, he didn't actually even miss the game. And I would be all for a rule, if you get a 5-minute misconduct with less than 5 minutes in the game, you lose the next game.
Because it's automatic suspension. I think it's the IHF? There's somewhere that does that. If it's late enough in the game and you get it, you automatically miss the next game. And I think that's smart, because it really cuts down on stupid, dirty plays at the end of a game, you know? If you already know, if you get a stupid penalty, you're going to miss the next game.
So let's talk the big trade this week. And there's no real reason to talk about this, because this is a Habs podcast and we don't necessarily spend a ton of time thinking about the rest of the league. It's only interesting because this is a French-Canadian superstar center that the Canadians were at least in on, if not close to, being able to complete a trade. I've heard a lot of takes, and I want to get yours, but I just want to summarize the ones that I've heard so far. The first one I heard is that trading a troubled asset for another troubled asset is just sort of kicking the can down the road. The related take is that, you know, the idea that Torts and Laine are going to get on like a house on fire seems a little weird. I did see a take making the point that I made last week about Jarmo Kekäläinen and Patrick Laine and the Finnish connection as being a possible connection. Of course, I made that in the context of Kokkaniemi, but, you know, anyway, you still have that Finnish thing. I don't know, how do you react, just in general, and then how you react to the trade, and then any sort of takes that occurred to you in the last couple of days since it was completed?
I find that, well, my biggest take is this is all just going to be a story again in 10 months. Yeah. Because Pierre-Luc Dubois didn't get a bigger stage. He maybe got a bigger fan base, but I don't, you know, Winnipeg seems to have a similar problem to Columbus in terms of players wanting to stay there, you know, and play there. So I don't know what's going on, but I don't know if it's how cold it is or anything like that, but, you know, we'll see. But it seems like since Dubois is only on a 2-year contract, that these, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if these rumors kind of popped up again. Same thing with Laine, right? I don't imagine him playing under John Tortorella is going to be very... I don't know if they're going to get along very well. So, I mean, we'll see. Maybe it'll be the last straw for Tortorella in Columbus, because he seems to have chased off... And it might not be all on Tortorella, but he seems to have chased off a number of skilled players. So, I don't know. You can only get so far with hard work and, you know, just guys that are pluggers and hard workers. You need guys who can... with skill. So... yeah, we'll see what happens, but I just feel like this whole thing is, like you said, it's kind of kicked down the road, where I think we're going to be talking about Pierre-Luc Dubois maybe coming to Montreal again in next season, or, you know, so we'll see how it all shakes out, but it's going to be interesting for sure to see. And then also the other thing is, you know, if the two players have to now quarantine for 2 weeks, or the three players, I should say, right? So both teams are going to be shorthanded for a little while, so we'll see how that affects them in terms of, you know, how they play, because they have both lost significant pieces of their team. I think the bigger thing that kind of irked me is, you know, this time, let's say last year, and I know things are different and things change, and that's totally understandable, and we talked about it a bit last week, how, you know, the irony of, you know, how long have the Canadians and their fans and media wanted a big center and also a French-Canadian, young French-Canadian player and someone who wants to play here, all these kind of things packaged into one, they had it. And had this been last year, I think most people would have said, you know, yes, make the trade, get the guy, he wants to play, all that stuff. And yes, things are going very well now, but now, you know, everyone sort of takes that one clip where Pierre-Luc Dubois was kind of, you know, less than motivated on the shift, and then he got benched by John Tortorella, and then he was traded 2 days later or whatever. And everyone's like, oh, who wants this guy? He quit on his team, blah, blah, blah. And I kind of get a kick out of that because, you know, you could find a video of every player in the NHL throughout the history of the NHL that has a pretty terrible shift. You know what I mean? So you're isolating this one shift, and fine, it wasn't good. I get it. But I mean, you know, you would never argue Brendan Gallagher is not a hard worker, but you could find a bunch of shifts where nothing happens and it doesn't look like he's doing much. And that's not to say he's quit on his team. It just happens. And so everyone's kind of dumping on Dubois now that he's not coming here and they don't need him. So he's not as good as everyone says he is, and he's not as good. You know, he's a terrible person in the locker room, and that kind of play poisons a locker room and ruins everything. Like, people know what it is to be in an NHL locker room, you know. So I just kind of find it funny, and everyone kind of overlooks the fact that, yeah, he asked for a trade, but he kept it quiet. And John Tortorella is the one who let it out that he asked for a trade. So he kind of threw him under the bus to everyone in the media and all the fans knowing that this guy wants out. So, you know, to act like John Tortorella is somehow, you know, just being a whatever. I mean, if your boss kind of threw you under the bus like that, you probably wouldn't be as super motivated to do what they tell you. Especially if in the back of your mind, you know, you're, oh, you know what, I'm going to be getting another job. Or I'm going to be working for, you know, the competition, or I'm getting a transfer somewhere. So I just find it, like, everyone, like, it's too easy, I find, to dump on the player for one bad clip of a shift. And I just kind of find it funny that everyone who would have taken Pierre-Luc Dubois, you know, when it was time to draft, the Canadians were like, oh, I hope we could get Pierre-Luc Dubois. Like, everyone was excited, and they were, oh, man, if we had a player like him. I mean, even in the playoffs last year, he was really good for Columbus. He was, like, their best player. And now, it's just, anyway, just find it funny that everyone, how quick everyone is to turn on the player. Because, oh, the Habs don't need him, and he had one bad shift, so he's a cancer, he's terrible, and I hate him. So really bothered me.
And, oh, man, yeah, I totally agree. And I even tweeted about it in frustration, because my least favorite sports personality on TSN 690, you know, was doing his normal thing of having the worst takes in sports ever. And sharing them. But here's what I want to do with this. That's good. The tale of two players. Patrick Laine plays the first game, has a monster game, gets a convenient upper body injury, and does not play again until he got traded. Same player in Columbus, played a couple games, played well, was thrown under the bus for wanting to leave his team. And then when he didn't play with the gusto that was expected of him, he was then benched. It's if you're a serious coach and you know what's going on with your player, don't play him. Like, there's no point in dressing him and then playing him for 3 or 4 minutes to send some sort of message.
And making it a bigger deal. Yeah.
It's all the worst instincts of John Tortorella summed up in one moment. And it's not like this guy has a great track record. People are trying to leave that place as fast as they can. And so the whole thing of defending Tortorella just makes absolutely no sense to me. And what it reminds me is that the NHL is beginning to deal with a problem that basketball's had to contend with. And that is the idea of the young superstar who does not believe that he owes his skill an opportunity to the team. He believes that he has something to offer himself. And in those circumstances, you're going to have to think about it differently. This is a different generation. You cannot approach with the old mentality. And this to me is just a really strong reminder. If you look at the two organizations, I think Winnipeg looks like a stronger organization because they realized the challenge that they had with Laine. And instead of putting him in a position where he wasn't going to play well and forcing the coach to make that decision, they seem to have allowed him to take 5 games off until the trade was completed. And I just think the future of the NHL has to contend with the reality that this is a social media generation. People have grown up in very different ways, including watching themselves, right? This is the first generation that will have watched everything that they have done, every game. Mm. That's not something that happened in the past. We have the idea of the player as their own marketing team. You know, people often associate that to PK, but there's lots of other people that have done it. Yep. Wayne Gretzky was the first one that did it successfully. Of course. And this is changing how players see themselves, and therefore is going to require a lighter touch. And John Tortorella doesn't have it. And you have to look no further than to see the young talent that has left that organization over the last 2-3 years. And this is just a perfect example of the NHL failing, or at least one organization failing to recognize the new reality that they're in.
Yeah, I mean, it all boils down to player empowerment, right? I mean, for the longest time, the players felt they had no power, no control. And obviously the NBA is the at the forefront of this sort of player empowerment and player control of where they go, what they do, who they play with. I think, you know, it's good, but also if you look at the NBA, it can cause some issues. I mean, obviously that's the biggest parallel because, like we just said, it's the one that sort of has it going on the most for the players. I agree. I mean, Tortorella, I mean, I don't mean to cut him down. He's a good coach. I just think he gets in this place, it feels like, and again, I don't know the guy, so I don't mean necessarily to malign his character, but I think that he has this combative relationship with the media, and I think he has this combative, like, I think it's to his head. It's a bit like Don Cherry, where I think Don Cherry is probably was a half decent coach for his time, but I think he liked being the center of attention a bit too much. And whether or not you believe that about Tortorella, you can't argue that his antics and the way he is with people and the media and even his players sheds the light on him more than the team necessarily. And I think that's where things might get away from him a bit. So to your point about, you know, having to send a message to Pierre-Luc Dubois, I mean, yeah, like, what's the point of sending a message to one of your best players? I don't understand it. I mean, obviously everyone needs to have a talking to every once in a while. I'm not saying, you know, he can't criticize or, you know, let the player know that he needs to do something differently. I'm just saying, in this situation, he wasn't playing poorly. Tortorella let it slip that he wanted out. Dubois was kind of probably less than happy, and I'm sure the team was probably less than happy also, because it also, although it didn't in this case, but, you know, it can affect, you know, the value of the player in the trade market if people know he wants to leave and the team kind of has to trade him. I think he has to change his heavy-handed approach. I mean, there's a reason why guys like Mike Keenan are no longer coaching in the NHL is their iron fist rule, iron fist approach doesn't work anymore. And, you know, I think Tortorella is maybe one of the last guys trying to do that. And to your point, it just has been an exodus of talent from that team in the last 2 or 3 years. And so something's got to change, because you can't keep hoping that he can sort of patch this thing together by playing, on top of having players leave and being difficult, a relatively boring style of hockey. It's, you know, it's this weird recipe of, that doesn't seem like it's going to, it's a weird recipe that is not a good one for success in the modern NHL. We'll see how it goes. It's just going to be funny, because I just think that no player got what they wanted in this trade. And, you know, you're looking at the Columbus depth chart now, their number one center is Max Domi. So having Domi on a line with Laine with a coach who loves defensive responsibility is going to be interesting to see. So we'll see how that all brings. I mean, we'll just see. I mean, maybe this is also the straw that'll break the back of the relationship between Tortorella and the Blue Jackets. You know, I mean, who knows what's going to play out? I'm with you. I mean, Tortorella kind of, I think, sometimes gets in his own way and causes his own problems. And that's sort of, you know, that's sort of how it comes down. And I think a lot of people are too hard on Dubois and not hard enough on Tortorella for this whole situation.
But so let's talk.
It's not
about
a Canadians
this.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so let's move
enough
from
time
one
on other teams
to more Canadians local thing. And this might just be a quick hit here, but did you hear last night the suggestion that Mete might be on the move because he's not going to be able to find he's really not going to be able to find a spot in the roster, and as much as the Canadians love depth, that might be an asset that could be moved for something.
Space. Yeah, well, I think...
Right, but he's not exactly a huge hit, but I mean, yeah, I guess
no, but
every million bucks counts.
Well, I think because there was a question if Paul Byron couldn't go, they couldn't bring in Michael Frolik, they were going to have to bring in Victor Mete to play forward just to be cap compliant.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that's part of it, I would imagine. But, yeah, I mean, look, Victor Mete, again, was another nice story. But, like, too many times with this team in the recent past was a guy who was put into a position he probably wasn't ready for. And because they had a severe need for that kind of player, a defenseman who can skate and has a pretty good first pass, And yeah, the Canadians now have better options, and he was a nice story, but I don't think anyone will be heartbroken that he's traded. I don't think, you know, I don't have any ill feelings towards Victor Mete. I thought, you know, like everyone, he was a nice story, but we all kind of saw last year that he, and even the year before, he was sort of punching way above his weight, and you know, it's just the realities of the business of hockey, where you need to make moves to better your team, and even if that means, you know, just clearing some money, then you got to do it.
I mean, it's a player for a pick, right? You're not really going to get anything back, probably, at this point.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So just clearing the space, and, you know, judging by the way the Canadians have been drafting, apparently, I shouldn't say apparently, everyone likes their drafts, but, you know, we've talked about the randomness of the draft. But, you know, every pick can be valuable, so, you know. I mean, Victor Mete was a late pick, too, and they got, I think, what they got the most they could out of Victor Mete. And then, you know, I guess you got to kind of cut bait at some point. And if that's how they have to do it, that's how they have to do it. And like I said, you know, I'm not, I don't have any ill will towards the player. You know, it's not like he's not like a player that's been, you know, vilified by anyone. It's just an unfortunate reality of salary cap hockey.
I think you're right. I think you're right. So, do you want to turn to the future, the games next week, or do you want to talk? I mean, should I be worried about? Yeah, go on.
No, just before we get to the games, I mean, there was that report. I don't know if you want to tell how long it'll take. That apparently Philip Deneau, in the offseason, turned down a 5-year, $30 million contract.
And is that confirmed, I think it was reported by, or is that one of those like?
I think the French media was running with it. Might have been a crazy reporter, but, you know, I don't know. We don't have to talk about it. It's just interesting to see. And maybe that's also where those rumors for Pierre-Luc Dubois were coming from Montreal, because if they know they can't, Philip Deneau wants out or wants more money than maybe he's worth. But yeah, we don't have to talk about it. It's just.
Do you think he's worth more than $5 million a year?
I mean, no. Look.
He's a great player. He's a very. I'm not paying him six, 5.5 maybe for 4 years.
Well, I think it's another. You know what I mean? Like, I think he. I mean, look, you have your agent, and you have like. I respect the fact that he wants to make as much money as he can. You know, you're one hit away from your career being over in, you know, in any sport, but especially a game like hockey. So, you know, go for as much as you can. Logically, no. I mean, he also seems to be the guy who's kind of bought into his own hype a bit, where he was playing the number one role. But because the Canadians had no one better, not because that's his role. On a, like a really good, like we see now, like he's playing less minutes in the Canadian, like how much, and it's not his fault, but you know, the Canadians now have depth up the middle. They have three or four amazing lines. Like, you know, they're not going out there every time the Canadians need a spark. And, you know, despite the fact he was playing on the top line with two guys who were scoring, you know, 30 and 25 goals a year, you know, he hasn't cracked, I think, 50 points in his career. I mean, he's a very good player, very useful player. I like the player. But if you overvalue yourself, you know, especially in a salary cap situation, and especially in a situation where the salary cap is unlikely to go up at all, if, or, you know, very much, if it does at all, I just think he becomes a luxury that they can't afford if he wants more than $5 million. I mean, even at five, I was kind of, I don't know, but. Because for all the stuff he does that's good, you know, he's good at faceoffs, very good defensively, you know, if you're going to pay someone that much money, he can't be a specialist, if you know what I mean. Like, he can't be a $5 million defensive forward. We've seen that happen where guys get paid, like, the name that comes to my mind is David Boland. You know, after the Hawks won the Stanley Cup, they beat the Bruins, he scored that goal in the last minute, you know, he was a free agent. And he was their number three center, I believe. And someone paid him over $5 million. I think it was Toronto. And yeah, but he's not going to be more than what he was.
Right.
So I think Philip Deneau's in that too. He's what he is. And it's a very good player, but he's not. I don't think he's swinging. He's not changing a franchise's. You know what I mean? Like, he's a very good player, but I don't think he's going to alter a team's trajectory at all, if you know what I mean.
I guess, this is probably what he considers to be his last payday, and he wants
for sure
star money, and I don't think he thinks $5 million a year in Montreal is star money. And so I wouldn't mind paying him a little bit more, but I don't. It seems like he's got a different vision of what his value is, and as you say, he's an incredible player, both sides of the puck. I think he is a really important piece in this team, but I think yes. He's reading the room wrong. I think, you know, if he wanted to go for an extension, he probably should have done it last year before you had all this emergent centerline talent. He probably would have been in a slightly better position, but it is what it is. He has another year under contract, and the Canadiens might just wait and see what happens this year before trying to figure out what the future looks like.
Yeah, and I also think it definitely depends on what happens with the salary cap. You know, if it stays flat or, you know, goes up by $1 million, then it'll be real tough.
I don't think it's going up. If it goes up at all, it's not going up very much. I don't.
My sense is
that these organizations are struggling at the best of times, and increasing the cap just puts more strain on them. I mean, it's a good point, and for the first time, right, we have a Montreal Canadiens team that's actually up against the cap, who have used their dollars to put talent on the ice, and so far through 6-7 games, we've seen the result. It's been pretty. So we have the home opener on Thursday, and Connor, I wanted to talk to you as a student of the history of the Montreal Canadiens. Home openers are always special things. And
yes.
This year, obviously, there's not going to be fans in the arena. It's going to be hard to pass the torch in any... I actually believe the Montreal Canadiens are really good at this, and I have the sense that they have something planned. Maybe it involves masked first responders or something passing the torch from... a hospital or a medical room all the way to outside the Bell Center. You know what I mean? I just have this sense that Montreal is going to try and do something that will be memorable and special, even given the constraints of the times we're living in. What do you think?
That's actually a pretty cool idea, I think. They always cook up something. I think Montreal is the best sort of pre-game ceremonies in the league. Whatever they do always ends up being pretty solid. It's going to be definitely odd with no fans there. Usually people are kind of cheering, going crazy. Even like, you know, if they do like team player introductions, it's going to be weird with, I mean, it's going to be probably piped in crowd noise, but it's just going to be odd in front of the empty crowd. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was something a little more subdued, just because, you know, you don't have that energy in the building with the fans there. But, you know, it'll be still do something. They always come up with something. I'll be shocked if they don't do anything, actually. They've kind of really embraced the whole torch thing last little while. So, yeah, I like your idea of the first responders and stuff like that. I think that are frontline people. They definitely need their moment more, you know, as much as possible. These people are, you know... You don't want to throw the word heroes around lightly, but they are heroes. I mean, we're all having to stay at home, and they're out there trying to make things. I mean, doctors, nurses, you know, all first responders, but even people who are freaking working at the, have to go to like the grocery store, you know, they're the ones, they're also out there sort of.
Oh, for sure.
Risking themselves, or people at pharmacies.
Well,
you know?
Teachers, teachers too. Petitioning the governor here because we're not vaccinating our teachers. Even teachers here in East Montpelier who have been going to school every day since September. And, you know, there's a lot of frustration in the fact that we are asking these people to put their health and safety at risk for not only for the kids, but for all the families who depend on school so people can go to work. And we're not taking good care of our teachers. And I think the thing to think about is that this is not a television event that is principally for the crowd in the arena that gets televised. This is now a television production that's principally for the people at home on their television sets. And so obviously the arena will have a part to play in it, but the idea of maybe when you introduce the players, you have screenshots of that player's friends and family. I really liked how they did that at the World Juniors Or, yeah, again, I really hope that they are letting their creative juices flow as they put the final touches of whatever we're going to get for Thursday night. I think there's something special about that home owner, especially in Montreal. And I hope, I really hope we get a good, I don't know, something to mark the occasion that brings us sort of all together in our own separate living rooms as Habs fans.
Yeah, it's definitely, we've talked about the uniqueness of the season, so it should be sort of a unique moment before the game, and I trust the brain trust in Montreal to come up with something good, because they always do. So it'll be definitely something to see, and I'm sure we'll both be tuning in to see what they do. So yeah.
So the Habs run looking forward to Calgary. Oh, yeah, me too. And no. I'm also looking forward to the game on Thursday, because Calgary looks pretty darn good. Markstrom has been playing really well. Calgary is a fast, tough team as well. It's hard to believe that anyone's going to get through the juggernaut that is Montreal right now, top team in the league. But if there is a team that can bring the Canadiens back down to earth, I think it might be the Calgary Flames.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, the Flames have only played three games, which to me is kind of crazy. But they're only three games into their season, so we'll see. But yeah, they definitely have the guys to the speed and the skill to sort of keep up. But the one thing the Canadiens have that seemed to give the Flames problems is a bit more size and are tough to play in their own end, which, you know, for all their skill, Calgary's good forwards are not overly big. So I think maybe if the Canadiens can slow them down a bit and kind of make life miserable for them, I think it could be a good thing for the Canadiens, obviously. We'll see. I mean, you know, Jacob Markstrom is really, I mean, I think the Canucks are missing Jacob Markstrom quite a bit after this last set with the Habs. He's sort of proving himself. He's definitely been a late bloomer as a goalie. But yeah, I mean, that's always an X factor. If Markstrom can keep up his play, then it'll be fun to see. It'll be fun to see the Canadiens seemingly play against a team that might be one of the better teams in the division versus, as we mentioned, you know, the Oilers and the Canucks are, you know, right now not looking especially strong. So, you know, it'll be good to see them against a team, sort of a bit of a measuring stick game to sort of see where they are rank up against one of the better teams.
Yeah. I just wanted to point out for Habs fans, so we're all, you know, part of this is all just sort of staying sane and being able to watch hockey. We have only two games next week. But there is only one other week where there are less than three games for the remainder of the season. And that's the end of February. One game on a Saturday night against Toronto. Otherwise, we have three or four games every single week. So if you're like me and the ritual of watching Habs games have become sort of part of how you're managing this strange time we're all living through, fear not. It actually sounds weird that there's only two games next week, and don't worry that it only happens one time this season.
And even that, the Saturday they're playing Saturday Sunday, so it's not even you know, it's the Toronto, they're playing Toronto Ottawa back to back on that week where they only play Saturday. So even that, it's not even. Definitely a lot of hockey to get to, a lot of hockey to digest. You know, it's no one's complaining because it is definitely a very welcome distraction. I mean, the only thing that's tough is, you know, those late night games. Yeah, the Vancouver, the back-to-back late night games. I stayed up for the shootout game, and then the 7-3 game. I was happy that they kind of exploded there at the second period. So I was like, this game's done, so I can go to bed, because it was a bit of a struggle to just keep my eyes open, just because, yeah, you know, being up and having to work and things like that. But
I don't see any late night games until March, actually. There's a few 8 p.m. starts.
I guess
they're just going to be at home. Oh, no, there's a 10 p.m. game against Winnipeg.
At an 11 p.m., yeah, in March. There's a 10 and 11 when they're back in Vancouver.
Yes.
In March. But I think that's the end of it, which, you know,
could be worse.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah, I just find it hard. So I'm like, I love watching the hockey, right? So I'm like, I always have this thing in my head where I'm like, you know what, I'll watch the first period and then we'll see. And then during the intermission, I convince myself to watch the second period. And then I've had this problem since I was I used to like watch. I mean, obviously, I don't do it as much anymore. But when I'd be in like high school and college, you know, watching West Coast playoff games, but watching the game and it's a really good game, you're like, okay, I'll watch the game, and then it goes to overtime. And then I'm like, oh, God, it's like 1:30 in the morning. And I'm like, I should go to bed. But then overtime is so much quicker because there's no commercials. And then you're like, then it's the intermission. You're like, okay, I'll watch the first 10 minutes of overtime. And then you're like, well, I've come this far. I have this whole thing where I can convince myself to stay up and watch it. Which, you know, when you're 20 or 22 is not a bad thing. But when you're, you know, 37 and have a 3-year-old kid that wakes up, you know, at 6 o'clock, at 6 a.m. if I'm lucky. It's not always the best idea. So.
No, you're absolutely right. And I do love that moment when you're like, well, I'm in this far. I got to just see it through.
Yes. I'm pushing my chips in. I'm done. So, yeah. So thankfully, so, it's not
I think
that
we did
much
it, right? I just want to one quick thing. Next week, in 2 weeks, I'm really looking forward to that Ottawa game. I have this feeling that Montreal and Ottawa are going to pick up that rivalry, and it's going to be, I don't know. I just have this sensation that Ottawa-Montreal is going to be a little bit nastier this year than anything we've seen so far.
Weird. I feel like the Montreal-Toronto rivalry is like the fans have the rivalry, but the games are never overly physical, or I wouldn't say they're overly intense.
Agreed.
Like I don't remember watching a Toronto game. Like, I'll be annoyed at the Maple Leafs, but like, I'll watch an Ottawa game, and I remember Viv. Like, I feel like that in rivalries maybe more intense, and so I agree. It'll be fun to see, and seeing Ottawa 9 times and like Matthew Tkachuk and all those guys. Brady Tkachuk, and it'll definitely make for some more intense hockey games. So I think we're all looking forward to that as well.
I mean, for the first time in a while, we can say Montreal is a young team. They have legit young players on every line that they have. And Ottawa is obviously a young team trying to figure out, you know, the Drake Batherson of it all and the Tim Stützle and all the rest of it. But it's just interesting to, I don't know, it's going to be exciting to see. I have a good feeling. Until then, my friend, have a good week, and we'll catch up next week. We'll know a little bit more about how Montreal is playing on home ice, and we'll be able to revisit our predictions for that home opener presentation. Let's hope it's a special one.
Yeah, I'm with you. Hopefully it's something special. So I hope you have a good week, and take care, everybody.
See you, Connor.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then, see you on the ice.